Hey, DirtCast listeners, we've got a recast for you. It's our interview with Irene McGee of Real World Seattle about the slap heard round the world. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And as always, thank you for listening and enjoy.
Hello, and welcome back to an all-new episode of DirtCast. I am your host, Madeline Davies. I am excited to be here. We took last week off. It was the 4th of July. Maybe you celebrated. Maybe you thought now is not the time to celebrate being American, and that's fair. But here's what we can celebrate. A really good episode. We have Jezebel's own staff writer, Megan Reynolds.
Hello, I'm Megan Reynolds, Jezebel's own staff writer, and I am very, very excited to be here on this podcast.
And Megan will be helping me discuss the dirtiest dirt of the week.
Can't wait.
Later in the episode, we have Irene McGee from The Real World Seattle as our guest this week, and she just has some really amazing insights, and she also was a part of this very profound moment in reality television in the late 90s.
One night, Rebecca and I were roommates, and we started whispering to each other, and that's how we found out our rooms were mic'd.
But first, I would like to know, how are you?
It's a rough week because last week was very short.
Yes, last week was only 3 days.
And this is a real sort of kick in the pants.
Yeah, we got to get going.
Got to get going. We'll do it. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
We always are.
I mean, the good news is that we have kind of like the greatest mystery of our time.
Really,
unraveling,
honestly,
in front of us.
In real time, almost. Just like, it's, I mean, twists and turns at every day, every hour.
And so we're going to be discussing it right now.
I can't
wait. On the dirtiest dirt. So Lena Dunham and her dog, Lambie, it was a tumultuous relationship while it lasted.
It was.
She fed it a salmon salad, I think, off of a plate at a restaurant.
Like a sidewalk cafe.
Yeah.
In front of many people.
It had some biting issues.
Many biting issues, well-documented biting issues.
Yes.
On Instagram.
She Instagrammed a picture of her bloody butt.
Right.
That the dog had bitten, which you just wonder how it got there.
I had some questions about that specific picture.
Sure, lay it on me.
After all this stuff happened, I looked at that picture and I was like, you know, that kind of looks like it could have been her period.
That's what I thought
right?
It was.
Okay.
I thought it was like a free bleeding picture,
which is very her. Exactly. But it was a little pre, like, free bleeding. It was a little before free bleeding really, like, gained traction,
yeah.
I suppose. But that
made it stain on the world.
I thought that was weird.
Yeah, so weird.
But in any case, so there was some biting, potential biting on the bottom.
Yeah, behavioral issues.
Pissing in his own mouth.
Yeah, the dog peed in its own mouth.
Which I still, no one has adequately explained that to me, and I'd love to read just like 200 words on like how and why. That's all.
Yeah, let's get a vet on that.
I would love that.
One thing that's interesting is that Lena loves to talk about Lambie, and she's been talking about him for a long time, years. And she recently got two, I think like purebred poodles.
Two little like tiny like toy, like what are a teacup. Who like little fluffy things, little teddy bear animals.
And suddenly, like, Lambie's kind of not around anymore. And everybody's wondering, where's Lambie? So she.
Valid question.
Right. I mean, everyone.
I mean,
the
every,
question on
literally,
everyone's lips.
I mean, I hear it on the subway. I mean, everyone. Where is Lambie?
Buskers are just like.
They have songs about it.
Yeah, they're bongo drums.
I mean, we have an answer as to where Lambie is. And in a very cool Instagram post that the copy of which was like, I don't know, like three paragraphs long.
Yeah, we cut it down a little bit.
Do you want to read it?
Please, go for it.
Oh my God, great. Well, you know, honesty is my jam, but this one has been really heartbreaking to talk about. But I feel I have to share that last March, after 4 years of challenging behavior and aggression that could not be treated with training or medication or consistent loving dog ownership, Lambie went to live at an amazing professional facility in Los Angeles at Matt the Zen Dog, where an awesome person named at the real Dana Shea, who is educated in a rescue dog specific trauma, loves him so hard. Lambie suffered terrible abuse as a pup that made having him in a typical home environment dangerous to him and others. We needed to be responsible to ourselves, our neighbors, and especially our beloved boy. There were so many lessons in it about forgiving myself and loving with an open palm and giving in to a larger plan.
I have a couple thoughts off the bat.
Please.
First, Danny Shay definitely sounds like a Vanderpump Rules character.
Yeah.
Like, the, you know, it's like Danny with an I.
Yeah. You're right.
And she's a real bitch.
That's a good point. I'm assessing Danny Shay's Instagram right now. Oh, it's a post about Lammy. The first thing is like a photo gallery of Lammy. So he's fine.
You say Lammy, which is probably the right way of saying it.
I don't want, because it's like a lamb.
Lamb-y.
But Lambie, I mean, Lambie reminds me of like short for a Lamborghini.
Yeah. I think I kind of like that. Like. Lambo, I think the dog.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, the animal, like the poor, like the victim.
Yeah. And he kind of like has like a lamb look, I guess.
He has people eyes.
He does. Ooh.
He's a dog with a person face.
That's always haunting to me.
It does freak me out. I mean, yeah. I'm sure he's very nice, I guess.
I mean, apparently not.
I mean, I take that back. He's a dick.
The other thing I immediately take issue with is there were so many lessons in it about forgiving myself and loving with an open palm.
Yeah.
When has, like, being overly forgiving to herself ever been, like, something that Lena Dunham couldn't do?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think the answer is never.
Yeah,
unless
she like,
does
lives
it
in a state of, like, being, like, unapologetic.
Yeah, like, unapologetic and, like, this is me, like, meh, and which is great. I mean, cool, but, like, give it a rest.
Right.
Quite exhausting.
Yeah, we need a break.
You need a break. You need to, like, go to Bali for, like, 2 to 3 months, honestly.
Ooh, yeah.
And just, I mean, everyone does. We all should. Let's
go. Yeah, let's go.
Let's leave.
We're just going to book tickets right now to Bali. So our next podcast will be on release on Balinese
time. I can't wait. It's going to be so fun. I'm already planning my outfits.
But as much as we're, like, shut up, Lena, we're also like, keep going, because it gets more complicated.
It was so juicy. I mean, so all of this happened. I feel like I had also been sort of kind of wondering what happened to the dog.
Yeah, because she like intermittently will post pictures of him.
Well, so the dog has an Instagram account and it has a Twitter. And if you go through like the timeline.
2017, huh?
I mean, my God. Look at how blessed are we?
So blessed.
But if you, I assume, is still posting Instagram photos and captions and tweets as Lammy, even though, as we will soon find out, Lammy hasn't been in the picture for what? How long? Like,
when she says last March, we discovered, she means 2016 March. She doesn't mean like
a couple months ago. She means, so Lammy has not been in her life on a day-to-day basis for over a year.
Yeah.
And yet she continues to maintain his social media presence, which is very bleak, I think.
Yeah.
Like, really dark. Like, a little, like, wow. That's, like, a separate issue, I think.
It's like if, like, a celebrity went to, what was, like, the famous rehab from the mid-aughts? The Cirque?
Promises?
Or, like, it's a Cirque Lodge, I think, is what it's called.
Not Promises,
like,
in Malibu?
No, this is where, like, Kirsten Dunst went.
Oh, right,
and, like,
okay.
Yeah, I think it's called Cirque. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, if someone was just still tweeting as them, like, everything's fine.
Yeah, it's their assistant being like, I'm great, like, guys, it's okay. Like, it's fine.
We all stumble.
Everyone falls and everyone gets right back up.
I mean,
most people.
Sometimes you got to lie there for a while.
You do.
If anybody can respect a wallow,
yes.
It's me. But you don't get to wallow for a year and change about a dog that you gave up.
Right.
And then it also, like, has come out since then that she, like, has a story about Lammy being abused by various owners,
like,
and
three owners prior to her. Yeah.
And then the shelter that she got him from, Bark, released a statement that was just like, what?
Like, what are you talking
about?
Yeah,
like, they have a record of where the dog was, and it was a surrender, and it only had one family before.
Yep.
And apparently it didn't even have any behavioral issues at the time.
Well, the other thing that they said there, so the Yahoo story came out, like, what was that, on Friday?
I think that was Friday. It was all late last week.
Right. So the story came out from Yahoo News, of all places, that was basically they talked to someone at Bark, at the dog shelter, who disputed, like, every single thing that she said.
And was so salty. He wasn't just like, this guy wasn't just like, oh, this is wrong. He was just like, threw a bunch of, like, digs about girls in there.
Oh, yeah. Animal rescue places, they really care about these animals. They will have all of the receipts. They will have sheafs and sheafs of paper and things and photographs.
Right.
To, like, if anyone comes for, don't come for a rescue facility. Like, don't.
Right. And it's like people who have genuinely devoted their lives mm-hmm. to the rehabilitation and care yep. of animals.
Yep.
And then to just be like, and I, one, like, you are supposed to, if you end up surrendering your rescue dog, you are, like, it's explicit that you were supposed to
bring it back
to the rescue, because the rescue has all of its records
right.
and can, you know.
Because you're not just going to, like, get the dog and be like, oh, yeah. And then, no, they have to, that's their job. That's, like, part of their job as a good rescue facility is
to. But I guess Lammy gets to go to a Zen center where you can do Tracy Anderson workout videos and meditate for several hours a day.
Lammy eats, like, acai bowls, but for dogs, it's whatever, like, that would be.
The Mad Men finale where, like, oh, Don yeah. Draper is meditating on the mountain.
At Esalen, yeah. So that is, I mean, given everything we've learned about Lammy in the past week or so, I'd like to think that he is not looking at Twitter.
No, yeah.
Definitely not paying attention to Instagram. Just, like, away from all of this, you know?
Just, like, wearing a bathrobe and, like, chain smoking yeah. while, like, holding a paper cup full of coffee.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'd like to, just staring.
Cup. What am I talking about?
Staring over a beautiful vista. Oh. The Pacific crashing in the distance. And he doesn't hear any of this.
I just want to read some quotes from the spokesperson of BARC, Robert Vasquez. We checked the records for Lammy. He was owner surrendered not enough time, so we do not know where she got the multiple owners that abused the dog. And that's in quotes, because she wrote that in a New Yorker piece in 2013.
Which is insane.
Yeah, like, that's a crazy thing to make up.
It's like 4 years ago. How long has she been lying about this?
Also, just like, how...
keep making that up.
Like, look at how we've, like, devoted our lives, where it's like, oh, 4 years, that's just flew by.
I know.
We're still talking about Lena Dunham.
Does that mean she won?
Oh, she won so long ago.
Yeah, I know.
But then he continues, when she adopted the dog from us, it wasn't crazy. I have pictures of the dog loving on Lena and her mom, which is weird if the dog was abused. It wouldn't be cuddling with her or be in the bed with her, and then in quotes, boyfriend.
That's my favorite.
In the pages of Vogue.
That's the best part.
And that's referencing, like, a photo shoot she did with Adam Driver, who is her boyfriend on Girls. And then this is actually, I think, the best quote mm-hmm. of them all for me.
Okay.
It's just hard to believe the dog was nasty when she took Lammy to every green room with her when Girls was still a thing 4 years ago.
Yes.
Like, ooh, like.
That was amazing on, like, so many, that was my favorite part as well.
Like, this guy's, like, Real Housewife tagline would be like, like, I may work with rescue dogs, but I'm the real bitch.
Yes.
You know, like, that
yes.
type of thing.
Listen, guy's got a point.
It is, like, one of, like, that is a thing where sometimes, like, dogs have a honeymoon period, and
yeah.
then they're, like, you know, it's, like, I'm not saying that Lammy didn't have his share of behavioral issues.
Right.
We don't know.
We don't know for sure.
We weren't in Lena's house.
I mean, thank God.
Yeah, we were not Lammy.
We were not Lammy. I am not Lammy. You're not Lammy. Thank God. Again.
I mean, that could be, like, a good campaign, like, I am Lammy.
Oh, my God. We can start that after this.
Lammy.
Oh, my God. We can start that after this, I think.
I just love that the whole thing is, like, kept going, where it's like, then the trainer is like, actually, Lena did try.
That's
and
right.
then the shelter was like, no, she didn't. It just keeps coming back.
It's just this ridiculous. Now it's after, so Lena made her initial, like, whatever, the first Instagram post. Then the shelter responded. Then it's just become, like, this ridiculous, like, he said, she said.
Yeah.
But all of Lena's responses have been via Instagram, which is my personal favorite, like, celebrity response. It's second to the Notes app, but it's,
yeah.
like, pretty, it's pretty good.
It's, like, the sweet spot is when they screen grab the Notes
yes.
app, then put
yes.
it on Instagram.
And then we'll write, like, an additional caption that's almost just as long, if not longer, than the Notes app. Does the Instagram caption have a character limit? I really feel like it should.
It should. It should just be, like, I don't know, one
you,
short
you
paragraph.
You shouldn't have to click the thing that says more.
Yeah.
You should not, it should cut off right above that. You should not be allowed to do anything else, because who's going to read? I mean, many people, I've read them each, like, five times. It's fine. But
yeah, I mean, if the Instagram developers are listening,
hello,
add that.
We have a request.
Yeah, we're very powerful.
Please fix this.
I also love that her, like, second response, it's like basically like a child's watercolor of Lammy.
Oh my God, the worst.
She's like, I walk past this in my hallway,
like,
every day.
Every day.
And she's like, there's a lot of bullshit stories about me in the news, and I usually stay quiet, but not this time.
No, like, and I'm speaking up. Like, are
when
you?
When have you ever been quiet about anything?
I've asked you to be quiet numerous times, just in private.
Yeah.
And it's never happened. And now.
She is, like, the perfect example of someone who, like, I've always felt like Girls was neither worthy of the scorn or praise, where I was like, it's, like, a decent show. It's fine. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
But she is a person who, like, can't let her art speak for itself.
Correct.
And so anything, like, she does that is cool or interesting, mm-hmm. like, gets completely
overshadowed.
Yeah, because you're just like, ugh, I'm going to have to deal with some weird fallout from this.
I mean, and I don't know. I guess I can understand that impulse to sort of make the thing and then make a big fuss around the thing in the sort of performative way that she does. But you would think that after Girls had been successful, then, like, fall back.
Right. Like,
just let it go. Just do the show.
And then also it's like, then your haters look stupid. If yep. you're just like, yeah,
if
guess what?
Quiet
My
about
thing is
it.
Successful.
Exactly.
Eat a dick, you know?
Eat a dick. 100%. But she is physically incapable. It appears that she's physically incapable of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I probably am too. I just have never had, like, a Lena Dunham success.
You've never
had. So I'm just like, I'm
it's
sure
coming.
If I made something, someone was like, oh, I have an edit. I would be like, you shut up.
Like, flip a table.
You're victimizing me.
Post Instagram videos of you sobbing.
Yeah.
Just like for hours.
Well, yeah. So anyway, Lena will not tolerate the speculation.
She's
about,
not here for
about
it. Lammy.
But
she responded on Instagram, then the trainer.
Basically, everyone's weighing in, and now we're doing it.
And now we're here.
It's come full circle. Not full circle. I don't know.
It's just, I mean, it will, like everything else, something else will rise to the top.
Yeah.
And
Lammy, I'm praying for you.
I mean, always. I have been for years, Lammy. If you can hear me.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, I'm really excited. Sitting across from me is someone who I kind of have known my whole life, not in person, but just as, like, a figure. She is a comedian. She is a writer. She's a storyteller. She has a one-woman show called Me, Myself, and Irene. She was, of course, on The Real World Seattle. We have Irene McGee in the studio.
Can I do my own applause break?
Yeah, you can.
That was such a great intro.
I also have to tell you that my family has always really been on your side. Like, we've always been, like, Irene fans.
Really? The whole family?
My mom, my stepdad, and I would watch Real World Seattle, and we were like, she's so funny, and she's so cute, and she's so wry, and, like, we all really loved you.
That is so sweet. You know, that is really funny you say that, because I feel like, you know, obviously, I was very, very likable until the mysterious departure.
Right.
Where they had me in, like, 9 different outfits from an edit, you know, and then, like, being like, I'm crazy and I'm leave. And it makes me feel so warm inside to know that people still like me after those departure shows.
It's weird that, like, of that season, the things that I remember is, one, I remember, like, being really charmed by your friendship with Nathan, because I think it kind of fulfilled this weird, like, ooh, she's, like, quirky, and he's, like, a handsome jock, and they're friends. Like,
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and then also, like, you were kind of, like, you had Lyme disease on reality television before it was cool.
A thing.
Yeah, and
before
now it's a thing.
Became Lyme disease. I'm actually doing something this month for Lyme disease awareness. Hopefully I get it out the
Hopefully.
Door.
For the deer,
yeah.
That's
I mean,
good.
Well, no, actually, I recently test positive again.
Oh my God.
For, like, the 4th time in my life. And obviously, it's the same case, but the way the CDC would record it, it's like just a new case.
Okay.
So wow. It's a real problem.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
People like me have it haunting them for 20 years.
Yeah.
So.
That's awful. I'm sorry.
I know, but I have a brilliant idea. You're going to be the first person I'm pitching it to. Are you ready?
Yeah, break it here.
Okay, so like Lyme disease, the main symptom is fatigue.
Yes.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
Back aches and just like flu, right?
Right.
And they call it an invisible illness because we're always at home in bed.
Right. And it's not like you look like death.
Right. We just become flakes. Like socially, you'd invite me out. I'd say yes. And then I'm in bed. I can't really go. But in our beds, we're not really powerful. And then I was thinking about all the challenges, you know, the ice bucket challenge. What can we do? They have this bite of Lyme. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Exactly. No one, it's been going for 3 years. I love the ambition, but it's, if something that, you know, you're an internet person, if it doesn't go viral,
it doesn't
just
exist.
Stop. And so I thought we would have a nap on Washington. We just take a nap on the Washington Mall. Wouldn't that be powerful?
It would be powerful and comfortable.
And comfortable. And if you can't come, you can just wear pajamas. And who wouldn't take a nap for Lyme disease?
I mean, I would take a nap for like
anything.
Yeah, you could just be like, my new cause is.
And could you imagine the taglines? It's just like, come to bed with me. I mean, that would be, maybe not with me, but with anybody.
Sure, but I'm saying like it's really hashtagable. But I want to go
okay,
back.
We're going
to. Probably to 1997, where you, young Irene. Are a college student.
Yeah, no, you're right. I guess auditions were 1997. Okay, go.
So tell me, like, what brought you to the auditions and what the auditions were like.
I'm going to tell you the real story, which I've never really told. This is a real story. I had probably a Lyme feverish sleep one day when I was, like, a year earlier. And I woke up and I was like, I think I'm supposed to be on that show, The Real World. Which was weird because I had never seen, like, I didn't have a TV. I never had a TV in college. Like, for me, like, being in a bunch of rooms with people while they're watching Party of Five or 90210, I was like, oh, no, I want to hang out and talk. Like, I don't want to, I hate this, like, commercial break talk. But, like, I had studied abroad in England, and I got back with all my Georgetown friends, and we were all talking about what we wanted to do when we grew up. And, you know, they're all very ambitious, like, politicians. I want to do finance.
Right, it's like Georgetown. It's
and lost little Irene says, I had this dream that I think I'm supposed to go on The Real World. And I remember their faces were like, what? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think I'm supposed to go on. One of the people that was at that meetup, she left a message on my answering machine, like a play a button answering machine on my telephone because there was no cell phones, that said, she had heard on the radio an announcement for Real World tryouts, and she left a message on my answering machine and said, this is your big shot, baby. They're in D.C. And I called a few friends, and they were going, so I was just on a lark completely. Said, okay, I'm going to go. And I had toe rings on. I had what I called it my uniform in college. I had, like, a holy gray T-shirt. I wore a white T-shirt underneath. I got all of these clothes, by the way, were given to me by, like, my rich friends.
Yeah.
They were, like, hand-me-downs from them.
I think I still am like that,
still like that totally today. Like, I go to people's houses. I'm like, oh, wait, you're donating? Let me see your purse.
Oh, I'll go through that
I can't
bag.
Help it. I can't help it. I can't believe the things I get rid of. So And that was my uniform. I wore it every day at Georgetown. Like, just woke up, wore the same jeans, T-shirt, gray T-shirt over top. That was my look. You know, toe rings, hair down. The line was insane. I mean, it ran the gamut. Like, but I would say most people were super dressed up. I mean, it must have been a bunch of it's a college mecca. So it's like Georgetown, George Washington, American, like— It was huge. It was a huge thing. And I had a midterm. So I only filled out like one answer. And at the time, I wanted to be on Road Rules. Although, as luck would have it, I did not get cast for Road Rules, which is fantastic because at the time I thought like that would be more fun.
Right.
Like adventuring. But now it's like, oh no, I just would have been on a bikini a lot on national TV. That would have been
also
way
too. Also, just like for as trapped as you probably felt in the Seattle house, like if you were in an RV.
In a bikini. Ugh. I just think the whole in a bikini
thing. There you go.
So anyway, I answered, they said, if you could bring one suitcase, what would you pack? And I said, my blow dryer and my Paul Mitchell conditioner and my Paul Mitchell gel. As a there's an underrepresentation of curly-haired people on national television, and if I go on TV, I need my hair to look good. And what's so funny is that people don't know is in the scene, all full circle, when I leave the show, I'm carrying a giant tub. That tub is Paul Mitchell.
That's your curly hair products.
Yeah, I would go to, like, real hair places where— like hairdressers so I could buy in bulk because it was cheaper because Paul Mitchell was that was super high end back then.
I mean, as a fellow curly, like I get that it's you got to spend extra.
So that is how I ended up auditioning. And basically they must have seen me because I was studying under a tree and maybe or they liked my answer. Or
yeah,
they
it
must
was like
have
a funny
had
answer.
People scouting. Who knows? And they put my friends to go to the right. And I said, I have to go. I have a midterm. Like, I have to go.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, we really need you to stay. And they sent me to the left.
It feels like the CIA or like even just like the TSA where it's just like, no, you have to go into the other room.
Yeah. And then I sat down with the director and we laughed and we joked. And I said, I have to leave. Here's my number. I can't stay. I didn't, there was no, it was just one way trust. Like, here's my number. I have to go take a midterm.
Yeah. I'm still in college.
I'm still in college and I need to graduate.
Right. Real world's not going to pay the bills.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know what you thought back then, but you didn't really know how the process worked.
Right.
I didn't know necessarily that they really don't pay you or.
That's
I mean, I think at that age, you're still. Even now, they say your prefrontal cortex doesn't develop until you're 25. You're not, like, fully an adult.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. Like,
it definitely was true with me.
To me, it was just, oh, I could live in an amazing mansion with hot guys. I mean,
yeah,
I think those were the priorities, right?
Yeah. So you gave your number to the director.
Mm-hmm.
Then he contacts you and is like, we want you.
Yeah, I mean, I went home with my friend Kathy and my other friend. And to hear the stories they told, like, one of my friends, not Kathy, Kathy just was, like, really went for moral support. But one of my friends told a story of how she gave, like, head to some lead musician. And I was like, that's what you said? Like, I'm never going to get on this show. She was like, what did they ask you? And I was like, well, they asked if I had sex. And I said, that's a little personal for our first meeting, don't you think?
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
And he started to laugh. And then I said, how many people answer that question? And he said, everyone.
They're so willing to just.
And I was like, well, I'm not.
Yeah, you're like, I'm going to keep it in.
Yeah, so it's a very long audition process back then. I can't imagine it was like that now.
Yeah.
But back then, you definitely, I mean, I think there were 7 auditions. They, like, called my nana. They called friends at school. They called my parent. Yeah, it was just a very. I mean, I guess that was the idea of a background check.
I mean, I guess now it's probably just like,
a real criminal record background check.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
But I feel like it's also probably just like, oh, do you like to get fucked up and have a really volatile personality? Great, you're on. Like,
right.
Oh, and you're hot. Okay,
oh,
fine,
you're hot.
You're on.
Right, 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 right. I know. It's just like a plastic surgery check.
I do want to move forward a little bit to, like, when you're in the house. And you've written about this. You wrote a really good vulture piece a couple years ago.
Oh, thank you. You know, that piece changed my life.
Really?
It really did because I had never really spoken about it. And when I did No One's Listening, it was great because it was this podcast and I was sort of, I never had to be Irene from the real world.
Right.
It was like, I was just Irene. And most of the people that listened to my show were tech people or media nerds, but they didn't, there was no marketing it as who
right.
I was. You
right.
know what I mean? And it was pretty brave of me to do.
I thought so.
And it really took a lot. Like, I definitely read it to my therapist a lot before. I was like, do you like this line?
The therapist was like, I'm not an editor. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Cool, because it was this hard to, like, you know, publicly talk about why I said what I said to Steven. But I didn't really address it. But just sort of to even publicly talk about it, I had never done.
So, I mean, just to, like, set this very horrible scene.
Right.
You're leaving the house.
Right.
You walk out with Steven.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of make a joke about how a marriage between the two of you wouldn't work.
Right.
Because maybe that was an earlier reference. And you say, because you're a homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, he was not out. He's now married to a man. And then he goes back into the house. takes the stuffed animal of yours that he had stolen, throws it in the...
No, he said, he called me a bitch first.
Yeah.
And bitch was not a word you could say on TV then.
Yeah.
He called me a bitch, and they aired that for, like, the 10th time.
Yes. Yeah, and then
And everybody's fine with a female being called a bitch, apparently.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, is to like, this day.
To this day, they're like, she outed him, but it's like, oh, but he got to call me a bitch day and night, and nobody took issue to that.
Right. Yeah, and then he stops your car as you're pulling away to leave the show.
Opens the car door.
Open palm hits you right in the face.
Yeah.
I told Levi, our producer, and he agreed, like, we're not going to play the clip just because it's an ugly moment. And it's just...
It's ugly. It's awful. And Listen, it's funny to me that, like even the comments, Yahoo just wrote a story about it yesterday. And, you know, the comments are just very, he said, she said, like, Irene shouldn't have done this. I would have slapped her in the face too. I get a lot of that in comments.
Right.
Like, I would hit her. Even on my comedy thing, people are just like, I would have hit her harder. And somebody wrote.
That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, it's how women are treated in media is horrendous.
Yeah.
And equally horrendous. Reality television has allowed a space for the other, meaning that it's a space with lots of women. It's a space with lots of different races, different, you know, genders, like different, you know,
orientations. Yeah.
So in some ways, reality TV has like pushed boundaries of things that people never saw before. But I would argue that we're still in, like, the circus clown type role.
Well, you referenced, too, the Jersey Shore in the piece for Vulture that you wrote. You referenced Snooki getting punched and how that was what they were promoting the season based on. Is like, look at this idiot get punched in the face.
Yeah, and there was an outcry. But there was no way to outcry back then.
Right, that's what I mean.
There was like, no internet. There was no, like, immediate reaction. Like, now these shows have a responsibility because there's an immediate reaction. And what makes me really sad is that nobody thinks, like, there was a thing on Survivor where one of the guys took out a guy who was transgender.
Yeah, he outed him as trans.
And it's like, again, he said that, but the show outed him.
Yeah.
Like, in all fairness, this guy was pushed to an extreme. He was starving. I'm not saying what he did was right.
Right.
But 100%, it's the show.
Yeah.
They own the edit. Like, if they genuinely thought that Stephen, you know, John Murray is a gay man.
John Murray, the executive producer and co-creator of The Real World.
If he genuinely cared about Stephen's sexual orientation and how this might come across for his life or his universe or his world, it did not have to be aired.
Yeah.
Period. And they didn't have to air me getting hit.
No.
I mean, it could have just been like Irene leaves the show and I'm just sort of called a bitch a lot on the way out. And I think it's just a power move. Like, I think the same way this Bachelor in Paradise, which if people don't know what's going on with Bachelor in Paradise, I wrote some really hilarious tweets about it. Did you see them?
I did.
They're funny. We should read some. But anyway, in Bachelor in Paradise, the show gets canceled. We don't really know why. There's a producer, apparently, who complained. And it's sort of being insinuated that there was a potential sexual encounter that may not have been...
that both parties were considered too drunk to properly consent.
Right, says the producer. And I always think, like, to be a crew member of a reality show, to own a show is different. But a crew member, those are, like... Those are people that are, like, so desperate for cash. They have student loans. Like, this is, like, the lowest of low you can get in, like, your career. Nobody says, I want to have a camera so I can film reality TV.
Right.
You know, they all want to make their documentary or work on a real TV show that's fictional or work in the movies. Like, nobody wants to be the camera guy to a reality. It's still pretty much the lowest of the rung of... big media jobs. In fact, I have friends who have done it and like they hide it on their resume.
Right.
It's just like what you do in between if you need cash. So I was thinking, like, gosh, they actually found a producer that would complain. Like, that means she had her student loan paid off. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, because she wasn't afraid entirely of her career.
Yeah.
But the odd thing is, you know, it's gotten this weird show, way more publicity than it ever would have.
Right. I mean, I wrote a thing about how it's, like, they accomplished what no one ever has been able to do, and that it, like, made people take Bachelor in Paradise seriously. Which, like, no one has ever thought of it in a critical way before.
Right. You mean as far as, critics,
media critics or something like, ooh, well, what is, you
right,
know, what's
they're above
the,
it. They're yeah. above it. They're above it. Journalists always follow the same tip, right?
Yeah.
So, like, they're above, you know, they might write this show, but they're not going to cover this because they think they're above that genre.
Also, good news, Jezebel.
Not
never
above,
above
anything,
it.
I know, but
we'll get
above
in that
Jezebel.
Mud.
So, yeah, so I take real issue because it's definitely the show and the network have figured out a way to blame it on these two people.
Yeah.
Which is insane to me. Do you know why? Because the person feeding them alcohol was hired by the crew.
Right.
Like, this is an island created for the show.
And this is not the first time this has happened. It's what the show is based on, is people getting drunk and hooking up.
And I think, like, this concept of, like, oh, well, they chose on their own to get so drunk. Who knows how much food they had available? I mean, when I moved into the Real World house, they had Vlasic pickles. Oddly, that was a sponsor because they really wanted to get the younger demo. You know, really good crunch on those Vlasic pickles. And alcohol. Like, that's what you moved into the house. And there was no food. They weren't like, let's give them some carbs.
I mean, that's the thing, right? It's sleep deprivation, alcohol, lack of food. And then then you're like, they went crazy. Like, what's wrong with that person?
I mean, that alone is a hard thing to be in. And then on top of it, they sort of set everybody against each other. And, I mean, I look at how, like, passionate I was and still am about media. And yet I see the needle going the wrong way.
Right. What were, like, the production manipulations inside the house like? Because it sounds like, one, you were never fully alone, which would drive me psycho.
Yeah, I mean, I got a yeast infection. That's a weird thing to say on Jezebel, but yeah.
I mean, I actually think
girl.
That's a really natural thing to say
it's
on Jezebel.
It's a very natural thing. I know, I love Jezebel. I have to talk to you about Jezebel.
Oh,
I have, like,
I'm so
a
glad.
Crush on Jezebel. Yeah, and I just remember, like, having to go to the store and then thinking, like, how am I going to go to the store? How am I going to, you know, hide this, and the crew is all guys, and they're not that much older than me, and
right,
and yeast infection stuff was like a, I mean, now everybody's gonna be like, she's had a yeast, whatever, but it happens.
I mean, we all have,
right? That was, but there was no 3-day miracle cure or one day. Back then, it was just like you were committed to 14 days of, and I was just so embarrassed and, like, hiding it under my bed. And then oddly finding out, like, one night Rebecca and I were roommates and we started whispering to each other. And that's how we found out our rooms were mic'd.
Oh.
Because camera people came out and they were like, we have to mic you if you're going to have a conversation. Like, we didn't know our beds were mic'd. So it was really an interesting time.
It feels like this, like, it's like a weird, it's a slightly less intense version of, like, the Stanford prison experiment. Where
you know, what's
like,
funny is I went to grad school and I studied that. And what's very sick is they've tried to do the Stanford prisoner experiment as a reality TV show.
I believe
it. And
it
had to get canceled.
Stanford prison experiment was this very controversial experiment that happened at Stanford, where a class was divided into prisoners and prison guards and kept in very close quarters. And it took a very, very short amount of time for the prison guards to become very abusive, and it got violent very quickly, right? Violent.
They had to stop it.
Yeah,
they,
so they
became abusive. They really took their power role on, and I mean, where reality TV is now is just in some ways, it's horrifying. And I think the thing that is upsetting to me personally the most is that the ability for the viewers to still buy into the notion that it's the cast's fault.
Yeah.
Like, you chose to be on it. You should know.
Right.
Like, people to me say, well, people today know.
And yeah.
I'm like, you definitely don't know.
Right.
Right? You and I get along right now.
Yes.
Totally. Right? We would leave this door and be friends. I'm telling you, if we were on this show, we would get along at first, and then you'd have a director interview you, and they'd say, we just interviewed Irene. She may have said this. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
And it makes you paranoid. We'd also be set up to fight, right?
Yeah.
There's a radio station. You can only have 3 DJs. And they did other things, and everybody wants to be a DJ. And then they did other things to make you fight. So they had like a fictionalized scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
That was impossible to finish, and we're broken up into teams. But more importantly, and I think this is the thing that is to keep the cameras on you. You know if you're being interesting. So
yeah.
Say we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
And you and I are chit-chatting. If there was a camera here and all of a sudden the crew walked out, you'd feel really terrible about yourself.
Right. Or it's like, oh, I'm boring.
Boring. This interview's not going good. And when people say that they don't remember the cameras there, like, they'd have to have a partial lobotomy.
Right. That's what I've always, like, been
there's
like, oh,
a director.
You forget.
Yeah. Yeah, no. That's ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, and that is just a way that producers and people who encourage this stuff try and justify it. Like,
right.
Oh, these people know. These people forget, and they start to act like themselves. And I would say the reverse is true. I think you become this, I found it with the cast, like, they became these alter people to themselves of who they thought she'd be.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as the camera was there. I don't think there was any time where people were, like, themselves.
Of course.
Necessarily.
I mean, it's that whole idea about, like, observation changes something just by the nature of observing,
right? I had to ask somebody as an adult, which I said, when you're at a wedding, you know how the wedding photographers go away?
Yeah.
Go around and you're supposed to, like, just talk, like, natural.
Yeah.
And you're, like, drinking your wine. So I asked a friend, I was like, do you see the cameras too, right? Like, he's like, yeah, everybody is. And I'm like, so we're just acting natural with the cameras.
But like holding your stomach in a
right,
little bit
but,
more.
But you always change your pose.
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of sounds like you started to become really frustrated with those manipulations.
Yes.
And stopped cooperating with them.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I definitely said to the cast, we're getting pitted against each other. We would get along.
Right.
All of them. I could take each separate one of them. And I have hung out with some of them after the show. They're great people. Like,
right.
There's nothing wrong. In fact, I would even say Steven and I got along. Like, it's just that in that environment.
Right.
So part of the problem, the lead up to, like, me leaving and whatever was, if somebody's yelling at you, in normal life, you don't yell back or you might leave or you're going to.
Yeah.
But there, it just sort of seems like you don't stick up for yourself.
Right. You, like. Yeah. And it's also like you're not going to be able to have your say.
Right. You also know you can be screwed in the interviews, too.
Right.
It's a very interesting concept that other people can tell your story for you, and it's from their lens, and
yeah.
It's not always true. So there was this thing that, like, there's 2 things that have happened recently in reality TV, which are really upsetting to me. And one was there was this Real Housewives of Atlanta recently where one cast member accused the other all season of trying to frame her to drug her and
Portia Williams, yes.
Right, to drug her and rape her or
yeah.
Have sex with her or whatever.
You should understand that drugging somebody while they're drinking
is
and
rape.
Taking them home is rape. Y'all accuse me of being a fucking rapist. That is crazy. Why would you even repeat that? You as an attorney, why would you do that?
Oh my God.
I can't get away from y'all.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was like an accusation of attempted sexual assault.
And everybody's like, well, Portia's wrong. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. The show in
yeah.
Bravo should not have aired it.
Right.
That should not be on air. What if somebody didn't watch the finale to find out that wasn't the truth?
Like, right.
That's a really screwed up thing to even put in the universe about a human.
Definitely.
And it's Bravo that did it. It's the production company that did it. And I think that's the thing I want to send home. That, like, okay, I appreciate what I said to Steven was horrific. Horrific. I was super angry. Totally wrong. But I stand behind the fact that I did not take him out of the closet. MTV could have aired whatever they right. wanted to.
Right.
They made a conscious choice
right.
to keep that in. And I think that's one of the things that people really need to understand, that they put the cast in situations that will create really high tensions. And, I mean, obviously, if you'd seen the lead up to it, he had been calling me the B word for days. Of course, nobody online is ever like, he called her a bitch and she's not a bitch. Nobody says right. that. Like,
when you were saying he was like sending you really mean pages or text messages.
Yeah, but also it was a very homophobic household I lived in. So it was just much more me being like, I was, you know, because it's military guys and they're very machismo. And so I was just sort of like against the whole, like, I was like, you can't say the F word, you know,
yeah.
like you guys shouldn't be talking like this. And I think like to fit in, I feel like Steven was saying things where I was like, it's not cool to talk about people that way. You know, and they didn't air things that, if they had, would have skewed the show. For example, in Nepal, some of the cast people were just, like, calling the Nepalese people. This is when I decided to leave shortly after Nepal. They were just like, call them Habib, they'll answer. That's horrifying to say. Horrifying.
Yeah.
And I went crazy. Not crazy, but, like, I got said to the camera people, you know, let me explain, you know, because they were young too, but I was like, you can't go into another country
right.
and treat people this way. And the Nepal trip was really hard for me because the crew was like running after people. They do open funerals, which is very healthy, unlike here in America where we bury people,
yeah, like,
we dress in black,
yeah.
and then we go to therapy quietly for right. a year. You know, in there, it's just much more, it's like a different custom. And they were like running after this funeral to get the footage, and I was just like, you're disgusting.
Right, and as people who haven't agreed to be a part of this in any
right.
way.
I was just very sad. I think I went into it thinking, like, this will be fun, and yeah. I get along with people. And then I was just very sad, and I felt very trapped. I think that was the other thing that's hard for people to understand now, but like back then, leaving a show was not an option.
Right.
There's no internet. You have to remember, there's no internet. There's no comeback I could have, like, of like way to say what was going on. I certainly didn't know at the time Steven was gonna steal all my crap, including my teddy bear. And
so that yeah. happened just like he just producers egged him on to do that, or
yeah, I have no idea how it happened.
Woo! Is this yours?
I told you he stole it. My stuffed animal. He took it the other night in the temper tantrum. So I just tried to explain to him that he'd be a lot less angry in life if he would just admit to himself.
I have no idea what possessed him. I have no idea. But I know he took more than just my teddy bear, you know. And that right. was the night I decided, like, I'm just out of here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not giving them a fight.
Which is actually, like, such a healthy...
Exactly.
A healthy reaction to be like, I'm going to extricate myself from this.
And I did. I was very nice to the cast. I just said, please, in your interviews, whatever you do, I need you to promise me you're not going to answer their questions. Just please, for me, don't answer their questions. Like, I need you to just have them have to show
yeah.
that this show is not art. And oddly, they left that in where I said art shouldn't hurt. And
I still
believe
that. It's not art and it's not reality. So it's, you know, what is it?
Right, but I think at the time I thought it was going to be. I thought it was just going to be fun. Like, I'm not used to fighting with people or... And even, like, Nathan and I, we got along so well. And we still get along. But because the plot line was, something's going to happen between Nathan and Irene. And
yeah.
He had to distance himself from me because
he had
a girlfriend.
I remember, like, the episode his girlfriend came, it was, like, a weird thing where he was being very rude to you.
Yeah.
And it just,
well,
like,
because, of course. Because right. he found out, like, in everybody's interview, they're trying to, like, make it look like something, you know. And
yeah.
it was just... It's just very uncool. Like, it was just very mean.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are lab rats, kind of, and it's, I don't know.
But I also think everybody wanted a career in entertainment. Yeah. And I'm not even excluding myself in that when I say that.
Again, I thought it was like a cool thing to do.
Oh, it was
up until
super
a point.
Cool.
I think probably like then I had like a turning point where I was like, oh, this sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course. Of course. Yeah. I mean, it was it did. It was cool back then.
Right.
I mean, it was like your only way in. And I think you think it's gonna lead to things. And the other thing is they have tons of footage on you.
Yeah.
And so the cast members would be like, Irene, don't talk about the camera because that's pissing them off. And then that's pissing them off. So everybody just sort of started to distance themselves with me because I just sort of figured the trick out, which was to talk about the process.
Yeah. And then they're just like, we can't use this at all.
And then they just stopped filming. And then the cast really got mad at me because
they still wanted to be on camera.
Yeah. And at one point, I remember they stopped all filming. They had a director come out and they tried to, because Nathan and I were like, this is not cool. Nathan was totally with me on the fact that like these interviews were uncool.
Yeah.
And David too, you know, and Rebecca certainly, but she was just younger. So she kind of just didn't care and went with it.
Yeah.
But they sat us all down. They stopped filming entirely. And I said to them, you know, if you're going to film this and keep it real, you should be filming you talking to us. And an assistant director came out and filmed that scene. And as he did, the director was like, you get that camera out of here right now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there was no breaking the fourth wall, which is interesting because I was watching 16 and Pregnant recently where they have the producers on air now talking to – it's just such a different landscape. It's just a
– Yeah.
And it's still a fake veneer, right? It's still like, okay, we're going to show the producer. We're going to show these questions. But the edit, the real power is in the edit.
Definitely. Well, I mean, I think it is that thing where viewers – are more accepting of like, well, reality TV isn't real anyway, so there's no harm in it, right? Like, that's kind of the story that you tell yourself. But there is, I mean, people do get hurt, as, you know, we were talking about the real world Atlanta housewives and that type of thing where...
Yeah, I mean, Stephen really hit me.
Yeah.
Like, it hurt. I had his handprint on my face. Like, they made it look like it wasn't that, you know, bad, or I guess I laughed because I was in shock, but...
I actually
only remember crying.
Very much empathized with that reaction of like the like,
like this is so crazy.
I mean, so let's talk about that a little bit. Where I thinking about that scene, which like again, MTV plays over and over again. They call it the slap heard around the world.
Yeah.
It seems like something that people would respond to so differently now, where it's like one, like you telling Stephen that he's gay when he's not out,
mm-hmm.
and two, him hitting a woman in the face. Like, I don't doubt that MTV would air that, but I have to imagine that there would be backlash to it now. Whereas then it was, like, considered just, like, entertaining. Like, Irene got hit in the face.
You know, Steven was just being such a bully when I left. He
yeah,
was just
sounds,
really
I mean,
bullying
I remember that.
Me, bullying me, stole all my stuff. And it was just like, you know, I have a daughter now, and she takes this bunny everywhere. And it's, like, her thing. And so, like... Now that I have a daughter with her thing, I look at him taking my stuffed animal and I'm like, that's horrible.
It's just so weird.
It's also so cruel because
right.
I asked him back. Like, in some ways it seems horrible, but it's also just like, you don't take a, like, come
right.
on, dude. And he just couldn't be kind. He just couldn't, you know.
He wouldn't give you your thing back when there's no reason
to
keep
it. Yeah, and the other stuff, it was like, fine, keep my jacket. Like, keep whatever else you got. I don't know, but, like, just...
Yeah, I mean, so at that point, it's like you have been kind of pushed to your brink. You're also sick on top of everything.
And and I definitely think, I mean, I definitely did not leave the show because of Lyme disease, and the
right.
show definitely did not help my
right.
Lyme disease.
Yeah.
Just in the same way that Pedro, when he had AIDS on that show, got very, very sick, much more sick during the filming. It's just a very stressful environment.
Yeah. And I think probably a lot of people, I mean, not to justify it, but a lot of people would say things that they wouldn't say in normal life or even
in
normal life.
Yeah. I mean, I've never been used to being called like a, I've never had somebody steal something from me. I've never been verbally abused that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think I've ever been so mad at somebody in my life either.
Yeah.
Where to me, it was just so obvious that we're getting set up.
Yeah.
That it was just like, come on.
Right.
Use your noggin here. Like, this is all, Like, also, it was a very interesting thing because the cast was mad I was leaving.
Right.
And that's never really talked about it, but it's an interesting concept because if you had a roommate in New York and you don't like them and they want to move out, it's like, hallelujah.
Right.
And they should have just been like, leave. But it's very set up like a cult. It's very set up. You have no, you know, you're a team. You're in it together.
But at the same time, like, don't trust each other.
But don't trust
each
other. You know,
be suspicious of one another.
Right. Yeah. So it's almost like I did see a lawyer and after, and obviously he didn't take the case and I didn't do anything. I didn't really have the money or resources. Right. And my parents were like, you just need to get over it. But he was like, I think we would have to try it as like an occult.
Yeah.
Because that's what's happening. Like, the directors have all the power. They don't talk to you much. You're limited with resources. All information's coming from one source. And it kind of, in some ways, has the similar stirring pot effect of that.
Definitely. You have alluded to watching some reality TV now.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get through that as someone who has been through it?
You know, some people recover from reality TV and therapy. I actually studied it. So I did one thing on alcohol use in reality television.
Yeah.
Because up until that point, alcohol use would be a character had a problem. Characters got around the problem and solved the problem. And reality TV allowed for this place where you could see people drinking. You knew they were drinking, and it's sort of all the time. And so I did it for The Real World. I analyzed an entire season, and the shows ran 22 minutes. And on average, people were seen drinking or using the word drunk. So it's the symbols. Like, yeah. I couldn't prove at some points when you saw a clear glass that it was alcohol. So 18 out of 22 of the minutes.
Wow.
18 out of 10. And that's incredible to think about because it's geared towards 11-year-olds and 14-year-olds. And 18 of the 22 minutes, people are seen drunk.
Yeah.
It's also crazy to me now how much sex is shown or implied.
Right.
You know? But the odd offshoot of me doing all that research was then I oddly got into the shows because then the way they're constructed, you kind of get into them. And then I, you know, didn't have a TV for many years after that. Well, my place burned down in a fire. So that sort of helped with everything. I just lost every
free
item
from
of
material
everything.
Possessions.
Yeah.
How spiritually clean.
I know people would say the shittiest things because I was in San Francisco at the time. So oddly, they were like, oh, Irene lost everything. You know, and I'd get like clothes for Burning Man. And I'm like, no, I don't need more glitter. Like, or furry pants. Like I did. I got furry pants. Or I got people's skinny clothes.
Yeah.
Like, the only good name brand clothes were like skinny jeans that girls don't fit into. And it's like you go through a fire and you feel fat. Like, it was
I've been through too much.
Yeah. So, you know, now I guess I started watching it because how do you not now? It's on all these stations.
Yeah.
And
it's what most shows are.
Yeah. I didn't even have a TV most of the time in New York. But then, you know, you have a baby and you're home a lot. And I ended up now with cable and it's just on.
Yeah, I find that very refreshing to hear from you, just as someone who, like, I watch so much reality TV. And again, I think I'm a really savvy viewer, but then I also feel a little bit gross about it. I don't know. It's like, but if Irene does it, I can do it.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting catch-22, right? Like, I look at The Real Housewives and I'm like, having experienced reality TV, it's hard for me to understand why anybody would put themselves in that environment. But then also, because these are repetitive cast members, meaning they go back every year and every year and every year, maybe they don't care.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it was like, I would never go back. But I wonder if the way these shows with these, I wonder if the plot lines are much more set up and agreed to.
Yeah, I mean, you can, like, hear the Frankenbiting, like, which is when they basically add words in after the fact that it's been filmed, or like recreate sentences by taking different words that you've said. And you can definitely hear that a lot, where it's like suddenly you'll hear Sonia Morgan's voice much clearer than it should be, just being like, "So, Ramona, tell me what happened at Boutique," you know, or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about The Real Housewives to me is how much of the edit is in the interview, and it's much less in like the cast dynamics.
Right.
You know, it's not like they show, like the real world was, or I feel like it was much more, you saw much more thing, you know, when I started doing my one person show, I had to rewatch it. If you saw my season now, you can come over and watch it. It's on my computer. It's really boring. You'd be like, how is this on TV? But that's also why it seems so real.
Right. I think that's why people liked it.
Like that. But now it's, there's like this level of detachment we have because we're like, you take five Upper West Side ladies, are they really going to just get into a cat fight?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but probably not.
Right.
Like in public, like, you know, so that to me, it's just an interest. I mean, I don't know. How does it net out on you? Like,
I mean, I think with those women, I think they genuinely like it. I think they like being on television. I think that they know what their jobs are, which is like, if this season is going to be about the Countess fighting with Bethany, they know how to do that. And where it falls apart is when they stop being willing to do it, when they're just like, we're not going to film with that person. And that's when the show gets messy.
Which is very interesting, right? Like, that's the interesting dynamic in The Real Housewives, how like somebody who's in good favor can fall out of favor because the whole cast can turn on them, and then they just have to cast somebody new.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, the show that kind of makes me the grossest, I think, which is oddly on the History Channel, is Alone. Have you heard of it?
Mm-mm.
You get sent alone in the woods with a camera, and you just have to survive. And they put you in, like, these really random, not nice weather. You're like, this is no survivor. Like, there's no sun. It's, like, raining.
Right.
And, like,
beach,
these people, like, starve to death. And, I mean, not to death. But that is the show I feel the dirtiest watching. But also, like, you have to make compromises in relationships.
Yeah.
And, like, those shows to me, it's, like, just the fact that they're on the History Channel and, like, they're considered so, like, we're showing how real hardcore camping is. And it's like, no, you're showing what it's like if you get lost camping.
Right. Like, most people who camp bring supplies.
Yeah, and people. Yeah. People are those supplies. Most people aren't like, check you guys later. I'm going to take a sabbatical for, not going to tell you when.
Yeah, right.
Even until either my body quits out or another player taps out.
Oh, my God.
And, like, there's wolves and bears.
I was just charged by a bear. I said, hey, bear. And it just keeps on coming at me. I'm scared. I don't know where he is. He could be into the woods circling behind me. I hear something out there.
And I don't think they're getting paid anything. I mean, they have to probably get paid the way the real world is.
Right.
For time on air. It's just crazy. I mean, just the fact that they're showing plastic surgery on TV is crazy.
Yeah. That I kind of appreciate in a weird way, in that I feel like, yeah, like, this is what these people look like, but also, like, look, they don't look like that. Like, look at, I don't know, the fact that I've seen the inside of Kris Jenner's face really grounds Kris Jenner for me.
That's funny. That's a great line.
It's true, though.
That's hilarious.
It's disgusting. It just looks like mac and cheese. I don't know.
That's an amazing line. Yeah, it's true. But it just shows how deep the pain goes.
Yeah, definitely.
And, like, we can just sit there and eat our tuna sandwich or, like, do whatever. And I mean, it sort of makes me question, like, what the next generation is going to be like, because there's no way to hide them from anything anymore.
Well, and it's like they kind of do it themselves, where it's like you put your own videos online, you do all this stuff now where everybody's living so publicly.
Right. It's also interesting to me that as far as reality television has come in some ways, and almost every station has some sort of show, if not many shows, it's still the lowest on the totem pole.
Yeah, right?
It's like nobody really wants to say they watch. And it's like almost the porn of television.
Totally.
It's like in the back room of Blockbuster. Like, you're never going to put on your Facebook profile that those are your favorite shows. It's like people's dirty secret.
Yeah, but everybody's doing it. Thank you so much for listening to Dirtcast, and thank you to Megan Reynolds and Irene McGee. Our show is produced by Levi Sharp with editorial oversight by Kate Dreese. Manana Mofidi is our executive director of audio. Our theme music is by Stuart Wood. This episode was mixed by Brad Fisher. Want to send us a tip or just let us know what you think? Hit us up at dirtcast@jezebel.com. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.